Hey, John, how are you?
Mics real quick.
One, two, three.
Are you hearing yourself in your headphones okay?
One, two, three. No. One, two, three. There we go.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
This is Rob. He's speaking into the microphone.
Ali, let's see how strong you talk in your microphone. Let's see.
How strong do you want me to talk? I have a theater background. Yeah, I have a toast with avocado and tomato for breakfast today.
Avocado and tomato, huh?
Yeah,
all right.
The two autos.
Okay, well, we'll have you on auto record. We better get the camera switched over. You guys looking pretty? Everyone's doing good? Okay. All right. Say hi. Okay, and I'm going to turn on mics right after the station ID. Okay.
KISL Avalon Radio, the greatest radio station in the world.
This is KISL Community Radio for Catalina Island. I'm here in the station. Who am I? I am Marco. I'm the station manager here on Island Radio. And hopefully you are here with us too. Either you're out in Machine Gun Park enjoying an incredible barbecue, a glass of cold beverage, or you're at home listening on the radio, wherever you are, you're about to experience something that only happens once a year for 1 week. It's the Transom Traveling Workshop here on Catalina. I'm here in the station with Rob Rosenthal, the leader and head honcho of the Transom Workshop, and I want to welcome Rob.
Marco, it's awesome to be here. It's our fourth year here. We've been here for four years.
4 years.
Sorry, for 1 week at a time, that is. Yeah.
I know you went home in between. Where is home for you?
Cape Cod, which is where the workshop's located. And so for people who don't know, Transom is a website, transom.org, and it's the website to go to learn the tools for audio storytelling, and the workshop is related to the website. I teach radio storytelling workshops all around the country, on Cape Cod mostly. We have an eight-week workshop twice a year there, and then I have 5 one-week workshops around the country this summer, and Catalina is one of the stops.
And what can you accomplish in 1 week? What's expected of these students?
The bar is high. The bar is high for the students. We're coming in, and we're going to, in a week, we're going to produce a broadcast quality public radio style story, with some of the students not having ever produced anything before, and some others having dabbled a little bit. We're going from zero to radio story in just 7 days. And we should start. We should probably jump in and let people know exactly what we're talking about by listening to a story. What do you think?
I think that sounds like a fantastic idea. Who are we going to start with?
So our first student is here with us in the studio. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Allie Lemer, and I'm from New York City.
Why would you come all the way from New York City to Catalina Island for a radio workshop?
I've actually been wanting to go to Transom for a while, so I was really excited to get into this workshop. I've been listening to podcasts since This American Life since 97, and I realized a few years ago that I love radio so much I wanted to, you know, make it. I wanted to get behind the scenes.
Why radio?
I like the direct communication, I think, between the producer and the listener, and I got into podcasts a lot when I was living overseas, and it was kind of like my way I could sort of stay sane in a culture where I didn't have a lot to hang on to. I could listen to stuff from back home.
Excellent. Do we need to know anything about the story that you produced?
I think it'll all be pretty explanatory, yeah.
Excellent. Let's play it. Marco, take us away.
Okay, the first story of the evening from the Transom Traveling Workshop here at KISL. This is Ali Lemer interviewing Margarita Jackson.
Hey, John, how are you? Very good.
The town of Avalon has about 4,000 people, and Margarita Jackson knows a lot of them.
Well, I still don't know everyone's names. I know their faces because I help them at the window at some point or another.
That's because pretty much everyone knows her. Margarita is the postmaster. She oversees all of Catalina Island's mail from its single post office. It's right across from the supermarket, so there are always people walking by her office window.
Oh, good morning.
Oh, I like it.
The window's open, right? I know, it adds a lot of air to the office.
Nice customer service.
It is.
And since Avalon doesn't have home delivery service, everyone comes to the post office to get their mail, which means Margarita talks to a lot of people every day.
What are you eating there, Emiliano? Candy!
From all the friendly banter, you might think Margarita has lived in Avalon all her life. But she didn't move here until 2012, when she was 39. She grew up in Southern California and spent 15 years working for the U.S. Postal Service, going from letter carrier to window clerk to handling large commercial accounts. One day, her managers made her an offer.
They're like, you know, what do you think about going to Catalina? Do you want to go? I'm like, okay, sure.
2 weeks later, Catalina's new postmaster arrived on the 6 a.m. ferry. Margarita didn't know anyone on the island, but not for long.
I had to interact with these customers, and they're seeing me every day. Oh, who are you? You know, I'm the new postmaster. Nice to meet you, Margarita. So for the first couple of months, I got to meet the entire town.
One of them was a man named John, an electrician who'd also recently moved to Avalon for work. He walked up to Margarita at the post office window and introduced himself. He also started getting packages. A lot of packages. Margarita didn't know this at the time, but John was ordering little bits of hardware online, like nails or washers, just to have an excuse to go to the post office as often as he could. Then one day, he did something bold.
I'm handing him a package, and he grabs my hand and holds on to it.
What was your reaction when he grabbed your hand?
Oh, well, you know, the butterflies and the googly eyes and that little bit of tense sweatiness of just anticipation or excitement.
So had you sort of flirted at the window before that?
Oh, absolutely.
I spent a Tuesday morning at Margarita's office, watching her staff at work and learning all about the United States Postal Service. And as far as I can tell, Margarita knows almost everything there is to know about it.
What's called every door direct mail or saturation mailings, standard mailing.
She steps in to help her busy clerks. Grabbing a pile of mail, she heads over to a wall of P.O. boxes. She starts tossing envelopes into the boxes with perfect aim.
Wow, you are fast at this.
There's actually a regulation of you're supposed to throw so many letters per minute.
Although she's worked in towns all over California, Margarita says there's something different about Avalon. It's more relaxed, with a strong sense of community. Plus, her office is just a block from the ocean.
I actually swim every day at 7 a.m. all year long. So I get to go for a swim, and then I change my clothes and come to work.
It's much less hectic here than the life she had on the mainland, which the locals call overtown, or OT.
Is there anything you miss about living OT?
Trader Joe's.
Okay, so maybe there's one thing she can't get here. But going by the stand-up paddleboard and the three mud-spattered mountain bikes in her office, Catalina has plenty of things to do to make up for it. And after John grabbed her hand that day, they started doing them together. Bike rides, ocean swims, long walks. They even gave their favorite spot a nickname, the No Kissing Bench.
When we would go walking at night and we would sit on a bench over on one of the hillsides and, you know, just look at the stars. We would sit so close that I was practically sitting in his pocket and he was determined to have me make the first move. So there was no kissing.
After a few months of this old-fashioned courtship, Margarita made her move.
It was New Year's Eve. I asked him to walk me home. Of course, the stroke of midnight. Perfect opportunity, right? You have to kiss someone at midnight. So that was actually our very first kiss, and then from there he walked me home.
John and Margarita eventually married in 2015. Margarita says that growing up, she never would have imagined she'd settle down in a quiet town on a small island. But now, she and John never want to leave. They want to raise kids and grow old here. They also want to give something back to Catalina.
We've made plans to refurbish that bench and get it, you know, and basically you rededicate it to the city, and then you get a little plaque on there and dub it the Jackson's No Kissing Bench.
For KISL Island Radio, I'm Allie Lemer.
Ah, the sounds out there of people applauding, that's right here, because that radio story was just played live. That was Allie Lemer interviewing Margarita Jackson. And I'm here at the station. I'm here with Rob Rosenthal, the leader of the Transom Traveling Workshop. We're having an amazing day of radio right now, and there's a lot of thank yous. So I'm going to try and give just a couple in between each story here. First of all, I need to thank the main organizer here on Catalina of this workshop. That is Jordan Monroe. And of course, his lovely wife, Jen. So awesome. Even though your baby did move a few of our settings on our studio equipment, she was also very welcome in here. Thank you, Ren, for adding so much pizzazz to the things that go on at KISL. And the microphones do sound a little funny now, but hey, we love it. Also, our amazing and one-of-a-kind engineer, Bruce Knopper. Bruce Knopper has flown in so many times from Sweden to help us out. Thank you, the Viking. Okay, so Rob, tell us about our next story.
Well, actually, why don't I have the producer introduce himself?
Hi, my name is Steve Nelson. Thanks for having me.
Where do you live?
I live in L.A.
And what do you do in L.A.?
I'm a sound mixer for TV and film.
So what's different about mixing sound for TV and film than for radio?
At work, I mostly push a big red button. Here, I get to actually open my eyes and ears and pay attention, hear people.
What's the red button do?
It starts the recording and stops it.
Oh,
That's it. That's all I do, really. It's just button.
And you're monitoring how loud things are being recorded and if they sound good?
Mostly, I'm looking for problems, turning off refrigerators and the same thing that we do here.
Right, but in this particular case, not only did you have to think about how it sounds and pressing the big red button on the recorder, but what else did you have to think about?
I found that I'm often in a conversation waiting for my turn to talk, and so here I had to listen more than I'm accustomed to.
Hmm. And what did you get from the listening, do you think?
I think there's something special about radio because I, as someone who makes it, I get to connect with people in a way that it's hard to find. It's hard to find that kind of like real connection.
And I think it's because it's through conversation, which is so ancient for us as a species, just talking with people.
Yeah, yeah.
What do we need to know about the story that you produced? Anything in particular, or can we just let it rip?
I think it's good to go. I will say that something not in the story is, my subject is a director, one of the directors of this museum on the island, and they have this exhibit going on now, a Betty Page exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
And the photography is gorgeous, and so people should definitely check it out.
Excellent. I totally agree, and it's a great museum. So, Marco, let's play the next story.
Absolutely. I want to remind our listeners that we're also live on Channel 3 on the cable system if you'd like to tune in and see a video.
There's more than 2,000 miles of ocean between Hawaii, where Devin Thompson grew up, and her current home in Avalon.
Island life is kind of similar across the board. You have extended families. In Hawaii, you call it ohana. Everyone turns into family, and that's the same on Catalina Island. People I didn't know 5 years ago are among my best and closest friends. Those are the kinds of relationships you build on an island.
Her journey to Catalina began with a 3,000-mile detour looking for one of those things that can't be shipped to an island, snow.
I was coming from Hawaii, and I thought, I'd love mountains, and I'd love snow. So my very first college I applied to was in Colorado. I have always grown up in melting pots, where people are always really different. And Colorado, specifically the small town that I was in, it wasn't very different, I guess. I've never experienced racism before, and I don't think of myself as anything other than myself. My grandparents on my mom's side are Italian, and on my dad's side, Hispanic and German. My dad helped me move in. It was pretty much right after they left. I heard something said in the hallway at the dormitory, and then went out with my roommates to a small party, and this stuff happened at the party. Just comments like, where are you from? You know, because I'm kind of tan. I think they made the same assumption. Oh, you're not Hawaiian. Brown is brown. You really look like a spick to me. I was like, oh, gosh.
Someone said that to your face.
To my face. Hey, nice to meet you. And you know how sometimes when you get a little bit nervous, your heart starts to flutter and you get that little adrenaline feeling in your fingertips? It was kind of like that. And I think it all culminated with my vehicle. I got milkshaked. I came out and my vehicle was covered in milkshakes. And I just thought, oh, this is just silly. I just loaded my stuff up. I didn't even clean the milkshake off. I just loaded my stuff in my car and left. And I'm of the opinion that, you know, we all have control of our lives. I can control everything. So why subject yourself to something that's uncomfortable? Just change it. Whenever you're uncomfortable in life, just change it. It was only about 4 or 5 days into the semester. I drove back to Texas, where my dad was. He was in El Paso, Texas. So I felt like a little bit of a failure dropping out of college 4 days into it. But as soon as I got to Texas, I drove to the local university, which had already started, and said, I need to go to school here. And they said, well, the school's already started. Have you applied? My dad has a similar story where he left his home when he was about 14 years old, and he decided that he really wanted to be an airline pilot, and he hopped a flight to Phoenix, Arizona, and went into the lobby at America West Airlines and said, I want a job as a pilot. And the lady told him he couldn't have a job because he was too young, and he said, well, maybe I should talk to somebody else. And he just talked his way into a job as a pilot.
So Devin took a page from her dad's playbook and talked her way into the admissions office.
You know, channeled my dad and said, I need to go to school here. And the lady was like, oh, I don't know what to do. I can't help you. The semester's already started. You haven't even applied. I said, well, I need to talk to somebody else then. And sure enough, I got into school at University of Texas, El Paso. Whenever I think I can't do something, I think of that story, and I know that I can do it.
Devin was headed to law school after college, but first she took a scuba vacation here in Catalina.
And it was only supposed to be 2 weeks. The boat captain said, oh, I hear you're a scuba instructor and a dive master. Do you want to stay for the summer? And I was having a great time, and the water was wonderful, and it's so different than Hawaii. So I said, sure. You know, the summer turned into 1 year, and then 1 year turned into 18 months, and then 18 months all of a sudden turned into 3 years, and the time just kept flying by. And one day when I was here volunteering at the museum, the executive director came up and said, I like your work ethic. How would you like to have a job? And I got it.
Devin believes her success on Catalina is thanks partially to luck.
I'm especially lucky.
And to that familiar Hawaiian feeling of ohana. From the city of Avalon, I'm Steve Nelson.
And that was Steve Nelson interviewing Devin Thompson. Wow, we're moving right through, and we have more thank yous to give. So I'd like to just take a moment to thank David and Katja Weinberg for helping out with everything that goes on in this workshop, and Katja for being here as well with another lovely little baby who likes to turn knobs in the studio. So thank you all for being here as part of this incredible workshop.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Yes, please.
David needs a special round of applause and thanks because he's just spot on at all times. Pearls of wisdom, radio wisdom, just sort of spill from his mind and his mouth. And it's just a real treat to be around. So thank you very much, David, for being an awesome teaching assistant this week.
Yeah, and David has been helping out over here at KISL off and on for 4 years now. And it's just a pleasure to know him. He's going to be doing lots of stories at KCRW this coming year. So please tune in to them as well and check out David's latest journalism. I also need to thank Catalina Broadband Solutions for helping us do the live broadcast today on Channel 3, and Susan Marion Offield, the Offield Family Foundation, Catalina Island Performing Arts Foundation, all of you who serve on the board of those organizations, thank you so much for helping keep broadcasting alive on Catalina Island. Okay, Rob, what do we got next?
Could you introduce yourself?
My name is Tommy O'Doni. I am a local. Many people that may or may not be listening to this will probably know me.
How old are you?
I'm 16.
How much public radio have you listened to?
Would you be disappointed if I said zero?
No, I want you to be honest.
Then zero.
So what possessed you to take a radio workshop for a week in your valuable summertime? It's like it's something that you don't know too much about, and you decided to dive into the deep end.
Well, my band teacher, Mr. Markowitz, said, you know, there's this radio thing at the first week of summer, and I knew it was for me because I'd been helping him write the Avalon Variety news script for I think 2 or 3 months beforehand, and I was just like, well, I like writing, so why not?
So if this, so this is your first exposure to public radio type storytelling and reporting and such?
Yes.
So here comes a dangerous question. So what do you think? Be honest.
It has many vicissitudes.
We have a word of the day game in class where there's a lot of one-upmanship, and you nailed it one day with vicissitude.
Indeed.
But do you think it's something that interests you, at least even a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's a great way to interact with the world, and a great way to introduce news and stuff like that. I think it has many applications for everything.
I wonder why it's not taught in high schools all over the country, because it involves interviewing, writing, public speaking of a sort, because you have to narrate, media literacy. I mean, there's 1,010 reasons why high school students should have radio classes.
But the big one is because none of the students like any of that.
And this is more fun?
Honestly, I think it's amazing. Like, even when you have to stay up really late to edit a story or look really close into the editing software and see, did I get that margin quite right? But, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Why don't we listen to see if you got the margins quite right?
I hope I did.
All right. Marco, go ahead and start the story.
All right. So this is Tommy Adoni interviewing Rex Costello.
John Council has one of the largest collections of vintage diving equipment in the country. He was kind enough to bring a small sample of it with him to our interview. We talked about his first exposure to diving and his lifelong passion.
Like a lot of guys my age, I'm what would be considered an old-timer now, but when I was a boy, there was a program that was hugely popular on television called Sea Hunt. It starred Lloyd Bridges. And, you know, when I think of the things that I've seen or been able to do, you know, it's all based on the roots of, you know, watching Lloyd Bridges and his character in Sea Hunt, and realizing that my involvement in diving and everything like that has allowed me to have all these experiences. And when you start connecting those dots, you just go, yeah, my life has been awesome. I feel pretty fortunate, that's for sure.
After discussing his roots in diving, John told me how it led him to Catalina Island and the Animal Rescue Program.
I came to Catalina sort of by way of diving, of the periphery of diving, and was trained as a submersible pilot. One of my tasks was to bring a small research submarine to Catalina Island, and allowed me to have a background working around and being around these different types of animals. And about 3 years ago, I was contacted by a 30-year-old organization in Los Angeles County called Marine Animal Rescue, headed up by a guy named Peter Wallerstein. They originally started a program just for whale rescue. So I may have foolishly said, yeah, I'll do that. I'll help you out. And we're not even on our third year on the island, and I've already had almost 500 cases. They might have been unfortunately shot by fishermen, so they'd have gunshot wounds. They do some pretty tragic things, and I think one of the most disgusting ones that we deal with occasionally is finding animals where they've taken seal bombs, which are like a small quarter stick of dynamite, and they actually pack it inside of a fish or a squid, light the fuse, and then throw it out almost like a gift to these animals. And of course, they race off and grab it. And so oftentimes, it'll blow the lower jaw off of them.
We soon began to reflect on his past and explore the true nature of his love for the water.
Well, I have to say that when your life has been really molded and in some ways dictated and altered the way that mine has, I don't think that there's any way around having all of the feelings that you just described. And really what it is the appreciation and understanding that your life path has been guided, and I've been exposed to experiences that I can promise you I would not have had otherwise. And I was able to work directly with astronaut Scott Carpenter, who was one of the nation's original 7 Mercury astronauts. And to be able to have the opportunities to spend more than, you know, in some cases weeks or years in their company changed my life.
At the end of our time together, John told me the story of a life-changing experience with Scott Carpenter.
One morning I was up early, and it was probably about 6 a.m., and down the pathway came Scott Carpenter walking along, and that alone, I think, just for me, is one of those moments where I'm saying, my life, I can't believe I went from a kid, you know, crawling around in the rocks on the beaches of Seattle to here I am sitting down on the coast of Florida with one of the nation's truly heroic figures. You know, Scott, I said, your career has been incredible. You know, one of the first guys to go to space. And all the, you know, when you say that, it's not just that. It's all of the training and everything that had to go into allowing these guys to go in space for the first time. I mean, this is monumental human endeavor kind of stuff. And I thought, your career, you know, it's just been amazing. And he said, yeah, he said, but look at you. And so he was a guy who truly appreciated it. And so he said, you know, you're doing much the same. And I said, yeah, but not on the same scale. And he kind of gazed off and looked out over the water. We were sitting down by the beach, and he says, yeah, they were heady times. And he said, you know, they say you only go around once in life. He says, but do you know what I say? And he looked at me and says, if you move really fast and do a lot of cool stuff, it seems like one and a half. And he had a big grin on his face. And I thought, that's it. That's the key.
From the KISL radio station in Avalon, California, I'm Tommy Odoni.
All right, that was Tommy Odoni interviewing John Council. Sorry, I made a mistake before the interview. That was John Council. All right, and Rob, tell us about the next story we've got lined up.
Well, you know, you've been thanking people, and I feel like I want to offer some thanks at this juncture. And I think it's thank you to all the people who agreed to be interviewed. They have absolutely no reason to talk to the students or to any reporter at any time, really. They're private citizens. They're living their lives. And they decided to say yes and carve out a couple, maybe 3 hours. I think mostly it was 2 hours, but whatever. It's still 2 hours of their lives to talk to a stranger with a microphone.
That can be scary.
Yeah, it can totally stick scary. And so just a huge thanks for people who are willing to give their time and answer our incessant questions. For the reporting. So absolutely. Thank you very much, people of Avalon, who agreed to be interviewed for the stories today.
Yes, and I have a few special Islanders I want to single out also. Caleb Linz, Debbie Harrell, the people at the Seacrest Inn for helping out with the room, and all the folks at the Chamber of Commerce. They provided some gift certificates for the participants as well and just helped to make everyone feel welcome. So thank you, all of you.
Would you like to introduce yourself so we can get to the next story?
Of course. I'm Paula Mardo from Los Angeles.
You produce a podcast.
Yes, I do.
What's different about what we did this week from what you've been doing for your podcast?
I think this week was a lot more structured. It felt like we were putting together not necessarily a news story, but like a structured profile on somebody, which I haven't really been able to do before. So that was really interesting, and I learned a lot.
So for people listening who've never produced a radio story before, what would you say the one takeaway from this week was?
I would say, that's a really good question. Gosh.
Do you want an A?
No, I don't know. I would say just go and do it. Like, there's nothing better than just doing it. Like, I feel like doing a podcast on my own, I kind of just learned from scratch. I went on Transom's website a lot and kind of taught myself podcasting radio. And this week allowed me to kind of like really get into the nitty gritty of stuff. And I think if you just go do it, you'll learn and you'll make radio.
What would you like to tell us about the story, if anything, before we hear it?
Am I allowed to say who it is?
Sure. Yeah, why not?
So I spoke with Muriel Wilhite. She's the owner of the Pancake Cottage, which is an amazing breakfast and brunch place here. If you're on the island, you should check it out. It was just a really great experience. I've never been to Catalina Island, and I've never met an island local, so it was really great to talk to someone who's been here for a long time.
Excellent. Let's hear the story.
Okay, this is Paula Mardo interviewing Muriel Wilhite.
When you walk into the Pancake Cottage, the first person you'll likely meet is Muriel.
I am Muriel Wilhite. I'm the owner of the Pancake Cottage for 33 years here in Avalon. I waitress, I hostess, I do everything imaginable, and I talk a lot.
The first thing I noticed about Muriel is her fabulous sense of style. Today, she's in a pink and black silk blouse to match her pink and black bracelet, pink dangling earrings, big pink sunglasses, and giant rings on each hand, pink ones.
My husband bought me that ring. He had it made because I didn't have a ring to match this ring.
Clearly, Muriel is good at paying attention to the details of her outfits. The same goes for her business.
You gonna order it?
One minute she's checking on orders, the next minute she's seating customers.
I'll put you over here.
Another thing Muriel is good at is keeping secrets. Here she is greeting a large party celebrating a birthday.
Happy birthday!
You're 45 over there.
45, you tell your age?
Yes, of course! It's a number.
I never tell mine.
Oh, you have to be 21.
Oh, at least.
Muriel's age is said to be the best kept secret on Catalina Island. I tried to ask her why. Keyword, tried.
So why don't you like talking about your age?
Because everybody thinks I'm so young. But I know they know I'm not. So I just keep it to myself.
Can you tell me what it is?
No.
Why not?
I said, the only thing you can't ask me is my age.
I know, but I want to know what about it. Does it make you uncomfortable for people to know?
Yeah.
Why?
I just don't want to. I never did. Because I feel so young. I feel like I can run circles around anybody.
Muriel is the kind of gal that won't let anyone tell her what she can't do. Once she gets to the restaurant around 6:45, she does unfinished side work, like filling the salt and peppers or setting tables. This gives her a chance to talk to customers and sometimes even dance.
Oh, I love to dance. I was voted best dancer in high school and best dressed.
I spoke with your daughter, Donna, and she told me you and your husband used to dance a lot.
We danced a lot. We used to dance before we got married and after we got married. And even in the restaurant, we would dance. And then I lost my husband. It's hard. Sometimes I'm good with it, sometimes I'm not. It'll be 4 years in July. I can't believe it. That was my third husband. And they're all dead. And everybody says, well, that's because they can't keep up with you. Ooh, I didn't get that. Catherine. What's up, Catherine?
Our heartfelt moment was interrupted by a sudden phone call. Muriel snaps back to business as usual.
Hi. Are you here on the island? Yeah, I'm right here. I'm up here being interviewed.
Muriel's life has been full of sudden interruptions, from the passing of her loved ones to a recent health condition, where her spinal bones broke and slipped onto her nerves.
It got so bad, I didn't know what I was doing. My cook said to me, Muriel, I go, what? He said, you have 3 orders in the window, been here. I said, take them back. I'm going home. I'm going off the floor because I don't know what I'm doing. And the pain is severe.
Because of her injury, Muriel was forced to take time off. As soon as she recovered, she went right back to work. Even though she won't tell me her age, it's catching up with her. Loved ones pass and her body isn't working like it used to. But that doesn't faze her or slow her down.
Do you think there's a secret to, you know, living an active life that maybe you've learned from all these years?
Yeah. I think if you keep on moving this body, it'll keep on working.
Do you think you'll ever retire?
I don't know. I'm not tired. Are they taking care of you?
And with that, Muriel Wilhite gets back to work, wearing a big bright smile and bright pink outfit to match.
Nice talking to you. Every day's a good day when I wake up.
Me too.
On Catalina Island, I'm Paula Mardo for KISL.
Okay. Fantastic. That was Paula Mardo interviewing Muriel Wilhite of the Pancake Cottage. And you're listening to the radio stories produced by the Transom Traveling Workshop 2016. This was 9 students who came to Catalina Island and are telling the stories of 9 islanders for you this afternoon. We're having a party at Machine Gun Park. There's a barbecue going on. There's people cheering and having fun. And you're welcome to either come down here to the park or stay tuned to all the great stories that will be keep coming at you for the next 20 minutes. So, or maybe a half an hour, maybe an hour, who knows. Rob, tell us about the next story coming up.
Well, I want to say something about all the stories. It's sort of, there's a kind of magic that occurs. People turn on the radio and then the story comes out at them. And, unless you're a radio producer or very literate in terms of media, like you don't really know what goes on in terms of trying to, you know, produce a radio story. It's actually, it's relentless, really. So first off, you have to make contact with the person that you're going to do a story on, and you have to set up a time to meet with them, and you have to go meet them, and then you have to interview them. But you have to come up with all the questions beforehand that you want to ask. And of course, then as you're talking to them, there's all the things that they say that you didn't think they were going to say. So you have to come up with new questions in the moment. Then you follow them around as they do something and you record them doing their thing. And so let's say for this week, students on average maybe got an hour and a half or 2 hours or 2.5 hours worth of recordings. Well, the next thing you need to do is go through all those recordings and find the good stuff. Because not everything's good. You know, not all the answers are great. Not all the sound that you recorded was great. And so you have to find all the good things. But more importantly, within all of those good things, you have to figure out what the story is. Like the whole time, you're like, what's the story about? What's the story about? What's the story about? So once you've figured out what you think the story is about and you've got all your good sound collected together in the software that we use, well, now it's time to write a script. And so you have to write a script because you have to write narration that gets you from one quote to the next quote to the next quote. And you have to figure out what sort of sound you might want to put underneath all of that sort of stuff. And that goes into a script, and then you get edited. And then you get edited again. And maybe in a couple of cases, there might have been a third edit for some of the scripts. Okay, now you're not done. Now you have to go into the studio and narrate the story and record that narration that you've written for your script. And you have to take one take and two takes and maybe three takes in order to get it done. And now you have more tape to bring back to your software that you have to edit and find all the good takes. And then you have to line everything up, narration and quote, narration and quote. And then the sound has to weave in. And then you have to sit with that for like hours to try to tweak it and make it all sound good. It's like, it's insane. It's insane what's required to produce these 4 to 7 minute pieces. It's really amazing the amount of work. And I just, in thank you mode, I just want to thank all the students for the incredible heavy lifting that they've gone through this week, going from zero to radio story in just 7 days. It's really quite remarkable. And our next story is from?
My name is Elisa Escarce.
Where are you from?
I grew up over town in LA, but I currently live in Mexico City.
Why did you come to the workshop?
Well, I've been sort of gradually trying to creep my way towards radio for the last few years. You know, I started listening to podcasts when I got my first iPhone, and I don't know, 3 years ago, and I was like, oh my God, these are amazing. But, you know, I don't know how people make these. And then I got this job where for a couple of years I was like doing background research on radio shows. And I was like, you know what? What I really want to do is just make these things. And my little brothers had come to Catalina as kids on field trips, but I somehow missed that field trip. So I was like, okay, that seems like all the things that I want all in 1 week.
Radio, Catalina.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so now you've gone to the workshop. You've learned mad skills. All right. What are you going to do after the workshop other than maybe catch up on your sleep?
I'm going to, you know, wing it and try to figure out how to do this.
Do you feel ready?
I feel super ready.
I have the answer for you. You should feel ready.
I feel so ready. And yeah, Rob and David had been such awesome teachers this week, and I feel so lucky to have gotten to learn stuff from them this week. So thanks, guys.
Tell us about the story if there's anything you think we need to know, or we can just start her up.
Well, as I think probably anyone who's on Catalina right now has noticed, there's some challenges with water, and that's what my interview was about. So yeah, let's listen to it.
Excellent.
Okay, this is Elisa Escarce interviewing Rock Goslin.
Last week, Rock Goslin was on a speaking tour in London. He was promoting something he called the device. Rock uses the device at his commercial laundry in Avalon, a town on Catalina Island. The device cuts water use by 75%. That's important when you run a business that uses millions of gallons of water on an island suffering from a drought, a really severe drought.
What I'll do is I'll take you through as the laundry moves through.
Catalina Laundry sits by the water at the end of a lonely one-lane road. It looks like the lab of a mad scientist obsessed with sheets and towels.
This pump will run 50 seconds.
There are rows of washers and energy-efficient dryers. Rock showed me a tangle of pipes and pumps that he's been using to reclaim water for 25 years. And then, there it was. The device.
This is the first true innovation in washing technology, probably in 60 to 80 years.
I had imagined it would look like R2-D2. Not quite.
It looks like we're washing with oatmeal when you look at that in here. Really kind of looks a little strange.
It turns out the device is just a really huge washing machine filled with a bunch of beads.
Now this is a load of napkins from, it looks like, the Avalon Grill. And it just started its cycle.
It's pretty cool. The machine is made by a British company called Zeros. There are over 1 million white beads inside. They're about the size of a lentil and made of polystyrene. And they're rolling around with the napkins and just a little bit of soap and water. Aziro's promotional video calls them a million tiny hands.
The whole process of doing laundry has become a science.
After the wash cycle, the napkins will be rinsed twice. First with water that Rock reclaims on site. He does the last rinse with fresh water he buys from Southern California Edison, Catalina's utility company. Rock is an engineer by trade, and you can tell.
Usually the average washer in a home, so you're looking at about 3 gallons of water per pound of laundry you put in. Catalina Laundry, because of its industrial size, was down to 2 gallons. Then when we put in the water reclamation system, it took it down to requiring 1 gallon of potable water. My Zeros machine is using 1 quart of water per pound.
1 quart. That's less than 10% of the water used by your household washer. Rock's Laundry is squeezing every spare drop of water out of its operations. For almost 2 years, Edison has mandated that Islanders cut their water use by 25%. Catalina can't draw from mainland rivers, so when reservoirs run low, locals take shorter showers, restaurants stop serving tap water, some hotels might have to close for a few days. Brock doesn't have to deprive himself or his clients, though. Between his laundry infrastructure and water-saving gadgets at home, he has managed to stay below the ration limits without changing his lifestyle.
I'm immune from the rationing, and I've been working with Edison to make sure that my clients and myself are protected from these mandates.
Rock has a lot of clients. He estimates that he washes linens for about a third of the island's hotels, including one of his own. After touring the facility, he calls a cab, and we head downtown to the Avalon Hotel, which he owns with his wife.
Sell a hotel room.
A Carnival cruise ship is unloading, and hundreds of tourists spill into shops and restaurants along the shore.
Sometimes it gets a little too crowded in the summertime, but that's what a tourist destination is all about.
So do you like the tourists?
They pay all my bills. Actually, they pay everybody's bills here.
We pull up to the hotel. It's nice.
In 2008, TripAdvisor named the Avalon Hotel as one of the top 10 romantic getaways in the United States.
And it isn't cheap. Rooms run almost $500 a night. You get what you pay for, though, at least in terms of water.
With the laundry plant being able to save water, I don't have to impose on my guests for shortening their stays or making their stays more miserable. My guests are provided with 2 bath sheets, 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, 2 washcloths. This particular room we're in has 10 pillows in it.
A letter next to the 10 pillows invites guests to help save water.
Do some of them just luxuriate and hang out in the 40-gallon soaking tubs? Yeah, but they paid to be able to do that. I think the people that live in Avalon do owe it to the visitors to do everything they can to save water so that the visitors can come here and enjoy our island. And I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for this.
He says some people in Avalon might object to the idea that residents should keep tightening their belts. As the drought gets worse, though, more people are turning to Rock's high-efficiency machines.
Will the drought continue to send more and more people to me? I would hope so.
Is the drought good for your business?
It's been better. It's been pretty good.
Despite his efficiency, there is one area of his hotel where Rock splurges a little. We walk out to his koi pond. A dozen fat orange and yellow fish splash over to greet us. I've never met a fish that reminded me so much of a puppy.
These are our koi. And we raise them to feed from our hands.
I reach my hand in and they slurp my fingers.
A weird feeling.
These cute little guys here, I didn't want to euthanize them if I couldn't keep the pond full.
Of all the Avalon's guests, the koi may have the best setup. The water in their pond, it's imported from the mainland. On Catalina Island, I'm Elisa Escarce.
All right, that was Elisa Escarce interviewing Rock Goslin. And this is Marco. You're listening to KISL Community Radio for Catalina Island. I'm going to offer a couple more thanks for people who
helped with the Transom Traveling Workshop that has just completed here in Avalon. First of all, Aaron Eubank, Lisa Lavelle, and the crew at the Catalina Coffee and Cookie Company, you helped a lot, and the treats that you provided really helped everything go smoothly in the morning.
Yum.
Also, CIVR. CIVR helped out with housing for our guests, and that worked out wonderfully as well. It's kind of a great big communal feeling over there at the little houses where everyone is staying, and no complaints yet. I think the toilets are working. And all right. Who do we have in the station now, Rob?
You want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Julia Ferguson.
Where are you from?
I just moved to Lopez Island in the San Juans.
Why did you decide to come to the Transom Workshop here on Catalina?
I found your website on the last day of the application.
Is that true?
It is true. I applied on the deadline. And I'm very happy I did so, yeah.
Wow, congratulations. So you had done some radio before.
A little.
Tell us about that a little bit.
For me, it was a lot. I hadn't had a real job before, and I went to a public radio station called North Country Public Radio, top-notch team of journalists, and I was living in the high peaks in the Adirondacks in the mountains, and I had really good training from Brian Mann, a longtime NCPR journalist, and loved it.
What do you like about radio?
I love the interview. I love the interview.
You said that in class today. What is it about interviewing?
I think it's the moment when you know they're having a real conversation with you. Mm.
So it switches sometimes, right? You're talking to someone and they're, I wouldn't say performing necessarily, but maybe it's performing. We'll just use that word.
And there's an edge, and then it gets softened. Mm. And then it flows.
What's the? How do you mean? Do you mind talking about that more?
I think it's in their voice. It's not what they say or really how they're sitting even. It's in their voice. There's a softness that comes out.
They relax. They forget the microphone is there, and they just tell you stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The kitchen.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky, yes. It doesn't always work that way, but you know. Yeah, the Kitchen Sisters are radio producers, pretty famous. They call microphones magic sticks, right? And because magic happens in front of them, it's kind of curious what people will tell you just because you have a microphone.
It's unlike any other conversation you get to have.
Yeah, it's pretty special. Anything you'd like to tell us about the story you produced before we hear it? Doesn't have to be.
Just keep yours open.
What's a takeaway for you from doing this? So you've already had some experience. You worked at North Country Public Radio, and then you came here for a week. Like, what's one thing that stands out to you that you're like, oh, glad I know that now?
I've been really inspired by how much I've seen classmates and teachers, I guess, dig in, like really work hard. And no one's asking you to do this. So I'm impressed.
So the community that's...
Absolutely.
That's evolved here. The Mutual Aid Society. Sorry, I have to say that every time.
That's it.
Great, Marco. Let's take a listen.
Okay, so this is Julia Ferguson interviewing Jack Tusey.
Jack Tusey lived in a treehouse on Clarissa Avenue. Yeah, you heard me right. A treehouse. It was his first summer here, and he was 15.
And I used to sleep there. For a month I did that, and then I decided that, you know, having to come down the every night to go to the bathroom and go back up in the middle of the night wasn't fun, so I moved on.
The treehouse still stands, but Avalon's different. Jack looks different, too. He doesn't have to wear a uniform to work. Instead, his shirt is crisp. His cell phone lives in his left hand. He wears gold, lots of it. The gemstone rings on his fingers would probably get in the way of dishes.
You were a busboy? You were a dishwasher? Yeah, I was a dishwasher. They don't believe it, you know?
He bought his first restaurant from his boss, and he kept buying and buying. He now owns 7 restaurants. They're all over town. Mi Casita, El Galleon, Antonio's, Little Antonio's, and Original Jack's. And they've been successful.
You know, by having 5 restaurants in Avalon, you're dealing with Mexican, steakhouse, breakfast, a deli, and Italian. So people don't eat at the same place that much. They want to try different things. So we could be in business and still make money by having different concepts. So that's our chain. It's CatalinaHotspots.com.
On the menus, you can find food from New Orleans, Kona Island, and Little Italy. But ultimately, the atmosphere in Jack's restaurants takes you back to old Catalina.
We're in an island that's 20 years back in time every day. You know, so that enhancing that experience here is part of that business model.
There's old stuff everywhere. Marlboro ads, Blues Brothers figurines, deer busts, Bob Steele headshots, sheet music, Simon and Garfunkel records, Mardi Gras beads, traffic signs, boxes of Barilla pasta. More than that, there's music. Jack says that's what really takes people back.
He's so fine. When they come on, you know, you remember where you were and what time of life it was for you, what you're in high school, college, or whatever, and those are the things that relax your body on vacation and make you feel good and make you want to come back to eat again.
What's your favorite love song?
There's too many to think about right now. You're cornering me. I can't answer you right this second. There's a lot of them.
Jack says his restaurants give customers a period feel. That's his whole brand. But the tacked up posters and the records in the jukeboxes do something more. Even if he won't admit it, Jack's brand is also Jack's story. And the walls tell it. They practically double as family photo albums.
This is the man that brought me here. Ralph Creasy. His son and I went to school together. And he was a fisherman, so he did this thing.
Oh, my goodness.
He hung himself up, and the fish was the fisherman.
What kind of fish is that?
Swordfish.
It's huge. It's taller than him.
Yeah, I know.
Jack collects a lot of history. 57 years later, he has warehouses of extra relics. His first dollar doesn't even get any wall space.
It's still up there. We just don't use it anymore. So many things. What I have in my restaurants, I still have more in the warehouse. So I can do it in a whole nother restaurant with them.
Nostalgia is his business, after all. He tells me that it's cost-effective to own his own storage space instead of just renting it. But he does admit it's personal.
It's been my little thing to save and do to keep the history alive.
After my restaurant tour, Jack drives me up to his new house.
Lookouts. See all these different lookouts? You know, you're on the hilltop. House is kind of warm. You know, all on one level. It's a two-bedroom house. Nothing pretentious, you know. It was a simple country cottage. And we want to keep it that way. We want to hold that historic look.
It sits next door to the Wrigley Mansion. From the picture window in the living room, Jack can see all seven of his restaurants. His walls and floors are bare, but it's a far cry from his treehouse.
It's a very simple lifestyle. Left, right, you know.
It's beautiful.
And you're there. The only thing problem is we got small bathrooms, but we'll deck them out.
For KISL Island Radio, I'm Julia Ferguson.
Okay, that was Julia Ferguson interviewing Jack Tusey. This is KISL. We're in the station. We're having a great time listening to the interviews of the Transom Traveling Workshop. And right now, I'm here with Rob Rosenthal and our next storyteller.
Yeah, and for people who are just tuning in and not quite sure what's happening to their radio station here on the island, we've sort of taken things over. For an hour and 10 minutes or so here live on the air on KISL. And basically what we've taken over with are stories that were produced in a week by students who are part of the Transom Traveling Workshop here on the island. Students who, you know, in most cases hadn't produced a radio story before, and in some cases had been dabbling, and they've gone from zero to radio story in just 7 days. And one of those people is...
I'm Stephen Rickin.
Where are you from?
I'm in Seattle.
Why did you decide to come?
I love radio. It felt like it was an art form that I could do. A lot of my friends are musicians, and I was a writer. I was envious of their performance, and this felt like a way I could kind of combine all that and share something with everybody.
And how does it feel that way after this 1 week here?
It does. It's a good feeling.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was difficult about producing your stories? Any challenge that comes to mind? Something that was like, how am I going to do this?
The challenge was condensing a day into 4 or 5 minutes.
Oh, right.
You spend 4 hours with the person. They show you the whole island. You have a great time. Yet, and you, I recorded pretty much the entire time, so I got 3.5 hours of tape. Cutting, cutting, cutting. 4 minutes. Here we go.
Sculpting.
Exactly.
Yeah. And how do you figure out what to keep?
You just go with your gut. You listen to the person, and you try to get to the heart of it.
Hmm. Any tips on that?
No.
No. Just do it.
Just do it.
Yeah. Great. Anything we need to know? Something you want to tell us about the story before we play it?
No, I know Randy and his wife, Mary, are here, and of course they are. They are fantastic people, and I think Randy was the best person I could have asked for to show me the island. He knows the land, the water, and the people.
Excellent. Let's hear the story, Marco.
Okay, here we go. This is Stephen Rickard interviewing Randy Brannock.
Randy Brannock knows how to tell a good story.
I've been a fisherman. I can lie. But everything I've told you today has been the truth.
The first story Randy told me was how he got to Catalina Island. It was 1976, and he was fishing off the coast of Santa Barbara.
And I got stuck in a windstorm, not too much unlike today. And the wind didn't shut off for 7 days, and I ran out of food and water.
The storm eventually passed, and the current pushed Randy north.
And when I got to Catalina, the water was clear, it was warm, and there was twice as many fish for half as much work, so I stayed.
40 years later, he and his family are still here. Randy is the owner of Descanso Beach Ocean Sports, a kayak rental company that takes hundreds of guests per week on natural history tours of the island.
It's whatever Mother Nature might put forth. Sea lions, dolphins, bald eagles, shorebirds, cormorants, pelicans, seagulls. A lot of people, we changed their life. It's pretty amazing to see people that have never gone kayaking before and go out and come back and just expound on the wonders that that they experienced out there, you know, and it's magical.
Randy and I went to the pier to welcome the first group of visitors coming in off the cruise ship. It's a windy morning. There's a thick, dark layer of fog rolling in from the east. Signs are being blown down as he introduces me to the locals.
This is Jacqueline. This is Stephen.
Hi, good morning. Nice to meet you.
Randy gets a phone call.
Hi, son.
It's his son, Jake. They're debating whether or not it's safe to take people out on the water.
Well, you tell me. I mean, the fog bank is pushing this wind in.
So what's the plan?
The plan is that we're going to wait and see if this wind shuts down and move everyone to the afternoon tour. So what we're going to do is adjust. We're a champion company, and champions adjust.
Randy's been adjusting to nature since he arrived. Before giving tours, he was an abalone fisherman. In the 50s and 60s, abalones were as common to find on a menu as a top sirloin steak, Randy told me, and not too much more expensive. It was a lucrative business. But in 1986, the abalone population fell prey to an epidemic.
A disease came through called withering foot syndrome. And the abalones died off in epidemic proportions.
Withering foot syndrome continued to ravage the abalones. The bacteria blocked the production of digestive enzymes, forcing the animals to eat their own bodies and die.
It was pretty devastating. So they closed the fishery, so that put me out of that business.
Naturally, Randy adjusted.
And I saw the writing on the wall, and both Mary and I, we sold our permits, and we took the money that we gleaned from the selling of the permits and started the kayak business.
Is that you?
Yeah, it is.
You can take it.
Randy gets a phone call from his son.
It's Jake.
It's a weather update.
It's worse. The weather is worse.
Randy canceled the tour.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be done automatically.
We head back out to the pier to break the news.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's so sad because you were my house payment.
Hearing Randy tell folks they won't get to go out on the water, you can tell he's disappointed.
Sorry, guys.
Not about the business, even though he may joke about it, but because he won't get to show them his favorite place.
I just feel fortunate to be here. You know, there's just a set of circumstances that allowed me to wash up onto these shores, and I'm staying.
On Catalina Island, I'm Stephen Rickard.
Okay, that was Stephen Rickard interviewing Randy Brannick. Another great interview from the Transom Traveling Workshop. And I'm here in the station with Rob Rosenthal, the main instructor of the workshop. And we have another story on our way. What's it going to be this time, Rob?
I'll tell you in 2 seconds. Here's something else I want people to know about the stories. Like, a simple version of these stories would have them, you would produce them as acts and tracks, which basically is narration and quote, narration and quote, narration and quote. A more complicated version would be narration and quote, narration and quote, and maybe there's a little bit of sound from some space. And a third complication would be narration, quote, sound, and then the sound of people doing things. Like in that last story, we heard the phone ringing. They answered the phone, and Stephen was able to, you know, sort of just seamlessly integrate the things that unfolded in front of him, you know, into the story. It's really hard to do, and I'm just so touched at how great all the students' work has been this week. They've produced difficult stories in a very short period of time, and the same holds true for Maureen. Hi, Maureen. How are you?
Hi, Rob. I'm good.
Could you introduce yourself?
I'm Maureen O'Hagan, and I live in Portland, Oregon.
You're a print reporter by trade.
I am a print reporter. I've been a print reporter for 20-some years.
But let's not count that.
No, well, we don't want to count. Yeah. Who's counting?
And so print writing is different than radio writing. How so? For someone who doesn't know that there's a difference.
I didn't really recognize the difference between the two. And I think I write in print in a plain and simple way. But it's another level of simplifying, even though radio is many layers of complexity.
And it's not simple just because we think the audience members aren't chap, as we say, you know, back home in Massachusetts. But it's because, you know, they're not in the room with us. Our information has to reach out and sort of grab them and touch them. And that simplicity helps out with that. And then, though, as an added level above writing, then you have to voice.
The voicing thing was very new to me, and I have a lot to learn, and I'm grateful for all the tips that I got.
Yeah, but you sounded great. You sound like a natural.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that.
You were very calm, and you just sort of read it, and out it came, and it sounds professional.
Well, thanks.
We should listen to it.
Yeah, it was fun to do.
Do you want to tell us something, any intro we need for the story? Or?
Well, on the Word of the Day theme, this interview got off to an inauspicious start when my interview subject didn't answer the door for 40 minutes. He didn't seem exactly like the kind of guy who was time was a big concern for him. So it was not unexpected, but everything came through and it worked out great.
Yep. And like a good reporter, you stayed through and made it happen.
I stayed through and made it happen. Not only that, I got to go on an adventure with them.
Excellent.
All right. This is Maureen O'Hagan interviewing Will Richards.
Years ago, Catalina Island had a zoo for exotic birds. It closed in the 1960s, and parts of the area fell into disrepair.
This was like an abandoned shack where there was just dirt, beer cans, you know, there was nothing. No electricity, no water, but it was a place to work.
That's Will Richards, an artist here on the island. He turned this place into a studio, and it's like nothing you've ever seen.
It has its own energy. I mean, when you walk in, you feel it. To me, it's living art.
Picture a kind of hobbit house built into the side of a ridge. It rises high above the street. Inside, you'll find a warren of open-air rooms, each one with a theme. One is for painting, another for wood carving, others for wax or glass or clay. The walls are covered, I mean covered, with art. Only some people might not call it art. They'd call it junk.
The thing about Catalina is it costs money to throw things away here. So they put it out on the sidewalk and says, free stuff. So this place is evolved from all that sort of a thing.
If this studio sounds a little crazy, it is. But it works. Will says it's his greatest creation.
I have a talent. I can draw and create things. But if I go for a walk, just say up the canyon, I'll see like oh, there's a neat piece of wood. I'll grab it, carry it. And by the time I get back from my walk, I made something just walking. So things actually find me. Wherever I go, I come back with more stuff.
He loads it all into his golf cart and hauls it back to the studio.
We'll walk around and I'll show you all the pieces. This little area here is where I make lamps, and I do. I have a lot of glass stuff. People throw away candy dishes, so I'm assembling. Part of it's a glass vase. There's a kitchen plate at the bottom, a candy dish, and then I glue marbles around them. And there's I got to use all these materials because they keep showing up.
Will's 66, and he's lived on the island for 41 years.
At 14, I started selling my artwork. Somebody had me do a portrait of their dad, grandpa, who passed away. And I took it to the people, and they go, well, how it looks like him, but it just doesn't have the life in him. And I'm thinking, now, how do you pull the life out of something that's an old blurry photograph, you know? So I took it home, and I just put two little white dots in the eyes, and I brought it back, and they go, oh, that's it, it's alive. You know, it was just as simple as that. Now this is like, when you walk up here, do you feel instant vibrational change? Now this is where I keep all the driftwood that I find, because I carve driftwood. Oh, we're looking at like maybe 80 pieces of beautiful wood that all has beautiful forms and shapes, and it's kind of like a little amphitheater here, see? And then this is the stage. So I come up here. So I can do the work, and I look at all these things, like they're all looking back. And they're all kind of going, carve me next, grab me.
It looks to me like he's got plenty of driftwood. But he was buzzing about yet another piece. He found it at the golf course and needed help pulling it out. For the sake of journalism, or maybe adventure, I hopped in his golf cart and we headed out.
What I do is I drive uphill with the motor on, and I coast down all the hills, so I'm only using half the amount of gas everybody else does. And I take my windshield out because I feel like I'm going faster. Most people don't like to go on these adventures with me because they're usually like out of this world, kind of dangerous. And good. We're gonna walk over here, and I'll show you what it looks like. Yeah.
Holy moly.
Wow, I'm not joking.
Oh, how big do you think that thing is?
Well, that's probably about 200 pounds, but it's hollow. So that, you know, it ain't going to be that heavy.
Will looped a rope around the stump, and we tugged, but it hardly budged. It was time for plan B, golf cart as tow truck, and I'm the tow truck driver. We got it out. It's an enormous fig tree stump. Will starts cutting away the rotten bark with a little hatchet.
Oh, isn't that cool all by itself? That is a beauty. Look how soft it is. Beautiful?
He'll get it home, somehow, and add it to his collection.
There. That is a beauty.
On Catalina Island, this is Maureen O'Hagan.
Okay.
All right, Maureen O'Hagan interviewing Will Richards. We're broadcasting live from KISL Avalon here on Catalina Island. We're getting near the very end of what has been a fantastic listening party here at the station. I'm here with Rob Rosenthal of Transom, and we're listening to radio stories produced here on the island over the last week, interviews with Catalina Islanders. And Rob, what has this year given you that you haven't had in other years? This is now your fourth year here on Catalina.
You know what always amazes me, and it's true, I think Julia spoke to it, that these guys come together as a unit. You know, they're nine people who don't know each other. They come from all corners of the states, as well as in Mexico, in this case, two people from Mexico. They don't know each other, and by the end of the week, it feels like a little radio family that's been living in the cottages, you know, over in town. And you know, this is a sad moment, actually, because we're about to listen to the last story, and it's kind of the end of the workshop. And it's sad because, I don't know, we're all going to go our separate ways after having become buddies with one another for a week. And it's also kind of stupid. And it's stupid because, look, we figure out how to make stories, and we figure out how to work together and our idiosyncrasies and, you know, what one person is good at and another person is good at and what someone else might be weak at, and you don't want to ask them help on that because, you know, they don't know it very well. But, you know, we just figure out who we are and how to do all this, and then we say goodbye. I don't know. Sometimes it doesn't make sense. I think we should stay.
Well, I think you should stay too.
And start Monday morning at 9. Let's go.
One of the ways that you stay is that we always try to include a local Catalina Islander in the group of radio students. And this year, Tommy Adoni was our young participant. And there may be a few of you out there who are thinking, boy, this is something I'd like to do. You know, we always reserve a spot or two. So if you live here on Catalina Island, we'd really encourage you to apply for next year's group. It is a life-changing experience.
Marco, thank you so much for 4 years ago calling Transom up and saying, we got an island, we got a radio station, it's all pretty cool, why don't you guys come over here and have a workshop? And it's just been stellar all 4 years, all four times we've been here. So thank you so, so much.
It took a person like you to say yes. So thank you, Rob.
Person like you to pick up the phone and call in the first place. We could keep going back and forth like this if you
want. Bing pong.
And you, both you and Jordan are the consummate hosts. It's you make it easy for us, and just thank you so much.
Another big hand for Jordan Monroe for putting together all the details here. Fantastic, fantastic work. What a great workshop.
And Dave Weinberg also for coming over and being the teaching assistant all week. It's just been stellar. Just
absolutely.
Been stellar. So our last story. Hi.
Hi.
Come on up to the microphone.
I'm here.
What do you think of microphones?
They make me nervous.
Why is that?
I don't know. They're in your face.
So who are you and where are you from and why are you even here?
My name is Juliana Iriarte. I am from Mexico City and I got a job producing a podcast recently. So I looked you up online and here I am.
When you leave, you're going home tomorrow, I presume?
Yes.
Yeah. What's going to happen when you get back to Mexico City? What are you going to do with the skills you picked up this week?
Hopefully I'll just keep doing what we did this week, but it will take a month or something to do all over again.
And what's a takeaway? What's something that you're like, ah, so glad I know that. That's going to help when I get back home.
The big takeaway, I'd say, like, it's nice to know that I can work the story from nothing to producing it, doing like interviews and then the computer and then everything. And I'll just get help for the things I don't know, but I know what I'll ask other people to do.
Well, I wanted to end with your story today because it's just hilarious. And it's a little on the meta side, right? Because it's about the production process and the reporting process and the workshop itself to some extent. So thank you very much for your hard work this week. This is a really funny story and people are going to love it.
I hope so.
I know so.
Okay, this is Juliana Iriarte interviewing Levant Alcabe.
Okay, turn on your recorder, check the levels, plug in your microphone, and put on your headphones. I did all those things. Now, I just needed to find my story.
My name is Levant Alcabe, and I'm 55 years old, and I am the president and CEO of Catalina Beverage. And what else are you looking for?
What else was I looking for? I had no idea. I recently got a job producing a podcast in Mexico City where I live. Since I had never touched a mic before, I did what anyone would. I Googled it. How to podcast. Eventually, I got to a website called Transom.
Transom.org is the place on the internet to learn about audio storytelling. And I teach the Transom Story Workshop. They're one-week workshops and eight-week workshops all across the country.
That's Rob Rosenthal, the lead instructor for Transom. I quickly signed up for one of their workshops. It was in Catalina, a place I had never heard of, but sounded great. Listen to this. Catalina Island. I met with Levant in his office. I sat across from him in the quietest place I could find, just like Rob had told us to. It took me completely by surprise when Levent took the mic from my hand.
Oh, so you're gonna hold the mic?
I have to hold it up this close?
No, but maybe it's...
What do you want me to do?
I can hold it.
I got the mic back. I was feeling a bit in control when...
Yeah. Do you know anything about our business?
No, so let me...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll let you ask the questions. And
ask
we'll
the
go.
Questions, right. How hard could that be? There was so much to talk to him about. Levent is from Turkey and came to the US when he was 19. And as for the business, he's the guy who distributes Budweiser in the island. Last year, he brought the Up for Anything challenge to Catalina. Thousands of people came. Snoop Dogg even had a concert. This year, they wanted to do something different, and Levent managed to secure the famous Clydesdale horses for the 4th of July parade. Surely this could take us somewhere fun. So, what does a beverage distributor do?
As far as the beverages, we're talking about beverages such as beer and soft drinks and wine. Every one of these are mainly a contract with either the brewery or the
I started bottle. To worry. So Levent is not the party animal I had thought he might be. Although he brings all the beer to the island, Levent is a businessman above all.
He's doing a great job, you know. Since he took business, he's improving the business.
That's Tomas Rivera. He has been working at the warehouse for 20-some years, and he agrees with me that Levent is all about business.
He comes over here once in a while, you know, to see what's going on and, you know, to supervise. And pretty much he's there in the, you know, at the office.
Tomas and the rest of the crew that work in the warehouse are tight.
We all like a family, all the employees. We get along really well. You know, we work together.
What have I learned so far? Levent is a great businessman and a good boss. Everyone here gets along and enjoys working at Catalina Beverage. Well, so what? That's not the stuff of story. We had talked about what a story looks like in class. You're supposed to have a character who overcomes some sort of a problem. Here, there's no tragedy. What else could I ask? Yes.
And what's the favorite product that you sell, that you consume?
We sell over here is beer, to make everybody happy.
What's your favorite beer?
My favorite beer right now, I like the Stella.
Most of the guys in the warehouse are from Mexico, and they all enjoy a nice cold beer. All except for one guy.
Well, I'm not a drinker, so it isn't beer.
That's Tim Winslow, the guy in charge of purchasing.
But my favorite product, it would have to be the sodas because, we supply so much for so many different types of people because adults drink soda as well as children. So.
Right. But do you have a favorite soda then?
No, I don't because I try not to drink it when you have diabetes.
Here I am in the middle of a warehouse looking for a story. It's clear I'm not going to find it asking people about their favorite beverage. So, when someone said Tim used to be a cop, I thought, maybe that's it. That's my story.
I think the worst thing that I had to go through as a cop over here was a chili cook-off. So bad that we only responded to felonies. We did misdemeanors, we didn't even go out after. There were so many. There was fornication on Front Street. We had... our SEB, Special Enforcement Bureau, ready to come over and supply us with extra help.
Wow, so how does that compare to working here at a beverage company?
Like sleeping in the middle of the night.
And yes, I guess that wasn't the best question.
This interview is over.
How could controlling crime compare to working in a warehouse? In Spanish we have a saying, echando a perder se aprende, which translates to something like, you learn from your mistakes. I am sure next time I have to produce a radio story, I'll think of all these and do better. To all you radio listeners out there, life's hard, radio is harder. The good news is, if you are listening to this, I guess I graduated radio camp. My name is Juliana Iriarte on Catalina Island. Okay.
All right. That final story of our group of stories today, I think, said it all. It is not an easy job, is it, to tell a radio story when your interviews are hard won and every great quote that you get is something that you really pay for in blood, sweat, and tears.
Life is hard. Radio is harder. I have a poster that says that. So, Yelena and everyone, congratulations. There's a bunch of people outside. I think we should hear another round of applause from the folks who are here in the park.
Make some sound, guys.
Nice.
Thank you for joining us out here at the station. It's very rare where we can have a live group of people all enjoying the same listening experience at one time. Kind of an interesting way to have a party, right?
Thanks again, Marco. This has been a blast.
It has been fun, and we still have food and beverages out here. If anyone would like to come and congratulate some of the radio participants, we're still here hanging out, and probably will be for a little while longer.
I should think so.
Yeah, let's play a little music and enjoy ourselves. This is KISL. This is your community radio station. Get involved. Maybe you can produce the next story here on Island Radio. This is Marco, and I'll be signing off. We're going to play a little music for you, and have a wonderful weekend.
Come up and down. Everybody looks her way. Listen and you'll hear them say, oh, there goes the cutest kid in town.
think about what I want to say.